This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
Well, thanks again for coming on, David. It's good talking to you again. It's usually too big a gap between our little chats. Today's purpose, I'd like to introduce our readers to your new book. It's called The Second Chance. And I think it's very, very timely on where we are, because I've said to quite a number of people that I think we're in the kind of same position as what happened in the 70s, where, you know, gold went from 35 to 200 roughly, had a 50% hit to 100, and then went from 100 to 800 in 3 years. So we're kind of, you know, plus or minus at the $100 mark after seeing a substantial rally from about 2002 to 2012. And this is where we find it. And it's interesting reading the preface. It kind of was like a trip down memory lane, because you mentioned the Jim Poplava's The Perfect Storm series that he wrote in 2000. And, that's about the same time that I started. I think you started, and all those things started coming together at the time. And his series is still up there. So it's kind of an interesting reading that a lot of the things are the same, only worse, with a few more zeros added on.
Exactly. And you're right. I was actually started on the web and, you know, officially, I guess, in 1999. But that was, or maybe 98, but that was a different domain. And when I moved to Washington State here, I had the silver investor domain, and that was in 2000.
Right. So it was interesting that it goes back that far. And the other book you mentioned is The Fourth Turning. And the issue there, because that takes a much longer view of history, And that, I think, is what the fundamental problem that many people have. They have no conception of history, and particularly the younger generation. The current financial system, they think this is the way it is and has always been, and it's nothing but this is an aberration compared to the way the global monetary system and financial system has been for thousands of years.
And precisely.
The Fourth Turning, he talks about the very long-term trends and what the changes are. And yeah, most of the people, you know, don't know, you know, who the short-term players have been and what's happened, you know, just slightly outside of their area of kind of how long they've lived. And that's it. So it's quite a wake-up call when you read The Fourth Turning. So like you say in your book, I would encourage people to do both. Read the Fourth Turning and this 10-part series that's still on Jim Poplava's website, Financial Sense. So the thing that, once we look at history and everything, then you often get the question, you know, Yeah, I've heard this before, you know, the world is going to come apart, and it hasn't. And in a way, the Perfect Storm series that Jim wrote, so the world almost came apart in 2007, but it didn't. And yet, he wrote the series in 2000, so it was still a gap of 7 years, even to that period. So what are your thoughts in terms of, and you've covered some of them, but maybe highlight why it is different this time.
Well, one of my errors was, you know, first of all, it's always an error to try to put a price and a time together. And, you know, I do it tongue in cheek for the public. Not that I'm not the same person, you know, in a public interview as I am privately, but, you know, my private work is a little more diligent because I don't look out too far, you know, a few months, and usually I'm pretty accurate. But regardless of my accuracy, the biggest fupa I remember early on the speaking circuit, when I started being invited to investment conferences, precious metal shows, resource shows, and the like, one of the bigger brokers in Canada, and it was, you know, after hours, I think it was day one, and everybody was kind of relaxing, and he got kind of aggressive with me, which is fine. I mean, it wasn't physical. It was, you know, verbal. And, oh, we've been hearing you guys saying this stuff for so long. And, you know, it's making a valid point. And, you know, I'm a big believer in letting people be themselves. And I'm run pretty deep, Nick, you know me, although I'm pretty good on my feet, much better than I used to be. But really, the biggest point I missed was that, first of all, it really is a Ponzi scheme. And so for a Ponzi scheme to work, you need more people at the bottom of the pyramid to feed those at the top. And that's what happened in 2000, basically. If you want to put it to a year, I'll use 2000. It's pretty accurate. And so you had about 1.2 billion Chinese coming in this Ponzi scheme using the Keynesian Anglo-American Empire banking model. And it was wonderful. So you could print up all you wanted, raise their society, make a commodities boom, and keep the game going. And as soon as I did the one hand clap that, yeah, I missed the obvious. I mean, I caught it, but not exactly on, you know, the time. I realized we've got at least another decade to go before this thing runs out of new people at the bottom of the pyramid. So I think we're now at that point. China's got problems. I mean, the euro's got problems. The U.S. has problems. Everybody has problems. It's a debt problem, like we see in the first, you know, the last book I wrote, The Silver Manifesto, a whole chapter devoted to the debt bomb. And there's really two preceding chapters that give you kind of a small-scale Austrian view of how the economy really works and why the debt bomb is what it is, and it is going to blow up again.
Well, that's right. I think this is the issue is the magnitude of the distortion. I'm old enough to go back to the 70s. So, in the late 70s, many portfolios had 20% in physical gold and in silver. And from the analysis we've done, just from a portfolio point of view, 20% is kind of the magic allocation for a strategic allocation in a so-called fully balanced and diversified portfolio. 20%, you reduce the volatility and you improve returns. It doesn't matter what the time frame is. You know, whether it's the last 10 years, the last 40 years, it all works out the same. The issue then is that it's not necessary for this time to be different, because if the world doesn't go to hell in a handbasket and you've allocated 20%, then you're going to have a better portfolio. Your book talks about adding to that core allocation, the tactical allocation in terms of the opportunities in trading both bullion and mining stocks. So that goes on top of that, and that's where the opportunities are huge. And the same can be said if you're a guru in tech stocks or health stocks or whatever the case may be. You could do a tactical allocation to improve returns. But I think that the real difference this time is that you touch upon in the book is the monetary aspect. Like we've gone over the top. There's $300 trillion in financial assets, and we did some charts where the current percentage in silver is 0.14% of total financial assets. And if you were to move to 0.1%, not 1%, but 0.1%, you get $130 an ounce. So it doesn't take much for some part of that $300 trillion to get nervous and start buying gold and silver, which there isn't enough to buy. And on top of that, you've got this absurd short position on the COMEX. I think the latest I read was, 350 million ounces short?
It's in that range, right.
So I think you're going to have a rise in price as it slowly rises, and then you're going to trigger a short, the mother of all short covering rallies.
I agree. I mean, your numbers are great. I've used the Ibbotson and Associates study on precious metals allocation to a balanced portfolio. It's irrefutable. There's one that Jeff Christian just did at the end of last year, and he gave that presentation at the Silver Summit in November. And I actually asked Jeff to do it for our mastermind group, which he did. And his numbers are basically the same. I mean, basically what he said outside of real estate, that all financial assets, gold represents about 1%, talking physical, and silver represented, its numbers very close to yours, 0.02%. And right. You have 0.4, I'm not going to quibble. And the idea, I didn't realize it was that small. I mean, one of the, and I'm going to digress just for a minute. And one of the things I didn't realize to its fullest extent was knowing the silver market was small. I mean, I knew that. But what I didn't know was how small until I got, you know, where I am, not today, but, you know, several years ago. But, you know, let's say 3-4 years into the silver investor. I mean, I couldn't really fathom how small it is relative to the other asset classes, which this clearly demonstrates. And of course, it's always been sort of a fantasy of mine. And one of the videos that's, I wouldn't call viral because none of mine really are, but one that's called Silver Market Myths. And it goes into one of my pet peeves that you get from some of the coin dealers that everyone should own a little. And I go through that. I won't do the whole video for you, Nick. But it's like, who's everyone and how much is a little? And if just all U.S. people bought, you know, 2 ounces of silver, that's 5% of the world's population. 2 ounces certainly isn't going to make you rich or poor. And that would be equivalent to all the mining supply on an annual basis. So, I mean, it shows very clearly in the physical realm. We're not talking about the paper paradigm that controls the price. We're talking about in the physical world that if 5% of the world's population bought 2 ounces, it'd corner the market. And so, as you suggest, just a few people. And one thing about the book we haven't got to yet, I want to emphasize because I don't want people to miss it, is that like the last market that we went from 35 to 200 to 100, so many people gave up at 100.
Right.
And then it got back to 200 and a lot of people gave up there, although it didn't stick at that place for very long, fortunately for the bears, because a lot of people, when they buy at the highest point and it's years coming back to that level, they are so discouraged that the first thing they can hardly wait to do is to get even. In other words, if they bought it at 200, it went to 100, it gets back to 200, they sell it because, oh my God, right. You know, their wife's off their back, their, you know, their friends off their back, everybody's off their, they feel this great sense of relief because I didn't lose, you know, I didn't lose any money. And then, you know, think if you bought it at 200, watched it go to 100, came back to 200 and sold, and I'm watching it go to 850. I mean, how would you feel, you know? And that's kind of what I want to impress. But the part of the book that's on the back cover, as you know, Nick, is that 90% of the move comes in the last 10% of the time. And actually, the first person that I ever heard that from was Jeff Christian. It was Jeff when I interviewed him way back when I was doing interviews pre-YouTube. We were doing video streaming before almost anybody else out of an office in Florida. And if I recall correctly, that's the first time I heard it. So I've, you know, it's attributed to me, even David Smith attributes to me, but actually it came from Jeff Christian. And, you know, doing the math on it, it's true. And what that says is that's what happened the last time. It doesn't guarantee it'll be that move this time. But what I can say with authority is all markets accelerate near the top. The housing market did it. The tech bubble did it. The bond bubble, the real estate bubble, anything you want to look at, the stock market itself, they all have this hockey stick or parabolic rise, and people get into this almost this trance state that it can only go up. And you got a lot of latecomers into the party, and it keeps going up, and that feeds on itself until they run out of momentum.
Well, I think, though, there's the potential in terms of getting back to the this time it's different, is that we can look at it as a bull in the bear market as a commodity, and commodities go through those kind of cycles. But there's a very good possibility that we're, as Jim Rickards said, are going to have a massive monetary reset, in which case we can get to and a very high, pull back a little bit and kind of plateau at that level and not have it function as a traditional you know, bull bear market that you see in traditional commodities.
Absolutely. And let me interrupt you there, Nick. I mean, I did address that, as you well know, several times in the book, because we are in uncharted waters. And, you know, the whole system is based on trust. And every day there are, you know, more people not trusting the system, whether they're in India or Indonesia or Vietnam or China or Russia or wherever they are. And that adds to demand, and especially physical demand. So, yes, it could be different. I mean, whether or not the paper price is important is actually moot at some point, especially in the monetary history that we both know so well. And so we could get to that huge spike and then, you know, maybe gets overvalued somewhat. But the thing I'm looking for is what you've pointed out, Mike Maloney and many others, is what is the value? And you've got to measure the value, not in terms of how many pieces of paper it's worth, but as how much real estate does it buy? How much oil does it buy? Right. Does it buy a car or a car lot? I mean, that type of thing.
That's right. Well, and the other thing that's different this time, because even if we go back, you know, to the year 2000, the dominance of tech devices is really exploded. So if you take an example like Apple Computer, and I forget how many billions and billions they've got sitting around in spare cash that they don't know what to do with. Well, what if it dawns on an Apple that they don't make any Apple iPhones without silver?
I know.
And maybe they better buy up, you know, enough of a stockpile for the next 10 years. What would that do to the price?
Exactly.
And that's where we've got a unique situation there. It's inside of an Apple iPhone, what is there, you know, a few cents worth of silver?
Right.
So it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, $20 or $200 to the price of the iPhone. But right. Without it, you don't make an iPhone.
Exactly. It's indispensable.
That's right. So that's another looming situation that I can't think of being similar other than platinum in any of the other commodities, because we've got this explosion in tech and all of tech depends on silver. And if you're a manufacturer, it's amazing that you're not stockpiling silver.
Well, there is a major conglomerate that has got one of its sources of supply is Avino. Avino, I own it. So full disclosure, I own Avino mine. It's been on our list for quite some time. It's a small growth stock situation. I know the management well and have for years. But one of the conglomerates out of Japan said, you know, let's not fool around. They go direct. And that's just kind of the first one in. You know, the first one is the leader. And most people say, well, what the heck are they doing? But it just re-emphasizes your point, Nick. And Apple is kind of your typical, well, I don't want to mischaracterize Apple in any way. And I have an iPhone, actually two. But a bigger corporation usually takes more time to make a move than something that's smaller, more agile. Regardless of that, the point being that some of the conglomerates have already thought ahead and decided they're going direct to the source. They want supply direct from the mine. They do not want to go to, you know, a broker or a warehouse or whatever.
Sure. Well, companies like Apple can easily buy several mines outright.
Yeah, easily.
But they haven't gotten around to that train of thought yet. Yeah. And you know, to reinforce this, I think it was 1998. Remember when Ford bought palladium, because for the gasoline cars that were using palladium in the catalytic converters. And I think they bought $2 billion of palladium at twice the prevailing spot price in a private deal.
Yeah, let me, again, I hate to be rude, but I'd like to interject. I know that story quite well because I had about four contracts of palladium at the time. And I can be brief. So Ford had retooled to get their line from platinum to palladium. One of their corporate guys goes out and said, buys palladium, not knowing how small the market is. The palladium's smaller than silver, as we both know, Nick. And the price started going up rapidly. And I had gotten a call from my broker that I had to pony up more money. And I said, are you crazy? I'm long. I'm not short. What are you talking about? I've got more in my account. Of course, when things go awry in the paper paradigm, they always make it to their benefit. So at the top of the market, to keep your paper contract, you had to put up double the spot price of palladium. Double the spot price. That's how insane it. And that those that had any palladium left after they made their deliveries to Ford, which were delayed, by the way, because they didn't get all that they bought, they had to lease it under the terms of the LME. In other words, so you couldn't keep your contract. You had to lease it at a less than market rate. And so everything just gets slid around, manipulated, twisted, turned, whatever, to the benefit of those at the exchange or that run the exchange rather than the people that own it. But what I do want to point out on the favorable side is that the physical realm definitely took over for some point in time.
Right.
And that was an unknown, unseen situation with palladium. So I think it's a good analogy for what could happen in the silver market. I mean, as we pointed out, 0.02% of financial assets are in the silver market. Just think if they doubled, where would that be? And, a lot of little guys, and I've always been for the underdog. I mean, the normal, average Joe, so to speak. I mean, most people could still afford silver, $20 an ounce. I mean, $20, whatever a dollar is, doesn't mean much. And so there's a mad rush, and there will be. I just don't know when. But going back to what I said earlier about the three-year run, I wanted to make that point as well. Sorry, I digress. But from the past market, the 200 to 100, and then we went in 3 years, as you said, from 100 to 850. And so 3 years from now is 2020. A lot of guys think that's the magic number. I'm not going to give a date today, but that's a three-year time frame. And this is where we could see something like that take place, where gold goes up triple from 1,200 to, or say quadruple to 4,800 or something. Number I don't think is out of the question. And then silver would probably outperform gold by a factor of three or so. So you'd see, from 20 to 200, maybe something along.
Well, that's where you get into the whole issue of the, I was crunching, some numbers like our gold silver ratio is 70 to 1. And in 1980, it was 16 to 1. So if we revert to 16 to 1 at today's silver price, we get $78 silver right now.
Yeah.
Okay. And if we go to $2,000 gold, we get $125 silver, and neither one of those is that far fetched.
No, not at all. It's really not. I mean, it sounds to someone that doesn't know what inflation means, but it's going to be determined at some point. I think that some of the commentators, Greg Hunter of USA Watchdog. Yeah, I don't think he said in a while. I don't watch every interview that he does, but he said either you'll have it or you won't have it. I think we could get to that this time, because with the internet, there's a lot more people that are a lot more aware of not only what's going on in the geopolitical system, the financial system, and the monetary system, but they also know you've got to hold it to own it. And information is so quick. I mean, with the smartphones and the internet, you could get a text from a friend, a family member, an acquaintance, your boss, whatever, and says, go buy silver, go to your nearest coin dealer and buy it as soon as you can. I mean, panic buying, in other words, could ignite instantly in today's world.
You see that the issue that, in addition, because for the average Joe, it's the silver coins that. The U.S. Eagles and Canadian Maples and so on, but they very quickly hit the wall from a production capacity, and that's happened already several times, and it wasn't that big a deal. And what happens, because in a certain way, you can look at the eBay prices of retail coins, like what they actually sell for, and without even any kind of panic, you're often seeing premiums of 30 to 50%. I don't understand why people are buying coins at eBay at 50%, but they seem to be, okay? So you can imagine that, particularly for the small investor that owns coins, he's going to have a double, because he's going to have an increase in the spot price and an increase in the premium.
Right.
at the same time. Exactly. The other thing that I think on a theme of why it's different this time is that this time around we've got an enormous number of underfunded and unfunded pensions, and you know we're going into a period where we've got a quadruple bubble on our hands. We've got a massive bubble in real estate. I don't know if in your area, but in Toronto, I've never seen such an absurd real estate market. Like we've had situations where houses get listed for $900,000 and sell for $2.5 million.
Wow. You know,
apps beyond comprehension. So we've got a massive bubble in real estate. We've got the most overpriced stock market, I think, since 1929. We've clearly got a bond bubble, and we've probably got a U.S. currency bubble. And if any one of those pops, they all pop. And that's, I can't remember a time in history where you had that. Usually they pop one at a time, like you get an equity market pop, and then you have a real estate bubble, and then the real estate bubble pops, and they all kind of alternate, but you don't have one where they've all got to the same place at the same time. And that's going to be devastating for the pension funds who are already underfunded. And at some point, it's going to dawn on them that they better get some silver and platinum. One pension
fund, I think it'll be too late.
You know, yeah, it's quite possible.
I agree. The synergy of events is inevitable. I mean, as you said, like once the first domino hit, it hits two, and that two hit four, and those four hit eight and 16, and it's an exponential function. The point I'm making is simple. One, I agree. And I think, like in the movie Rollover that I used to, you know, show during some of my earlier presentations, it'll be a point where maybe one or two pension funds get in, maybe, and no one else can, because it's just too small a pipe. You can't get through. So what will happen is, unfortunately, a lot of people will see their life savings go away, just like what happened in the Weimar Republic. You know, their whole life insurance policy, you know, that is basically what will happen. As far as I'm concerned, I'll say it's opinion, but it's backed up by what's happened in the past, is the phones will just be taken off the hook. You will not be able to get through to your broker, your banker, your insurance policy person, or any of that stuff. So that's why I go back to what Greg Hunter says, either you have it or you don't. And as you advocate, you know, another thought came in. Back to the Jeff Christian presentation, his number for allocation was 25%, which I was really, really taken back, because from Jeff, if you know Jeff, it's much more establishment than I am.
Right.
And for him to say the correct amount of physical metal exposure was 25%, I almost fell off my chair, but I was standing at the top.
Well, actually, we've run those numbers up, down, and sideways, because we set up a huge model where we can vary the percentage, right?
Right.
And what we're looking at is what is the best number between minimizing volatility, but more importantly, improving the Sortino ratio and maximizing returns. And it depends on where you want to fall, but it's between 20 to 25%. Yeah. The 25% gives you more performance and slightly less volatility, and the 20% gives you less volatility but less performance. That type of thing. The other thing, what we've done is we've done a sort of like a periodic table of investments. So if you take REITs, gold, silver, bonds, stocks, and cash as the main categories. Now I've left out commodities because there is no real convenient method of actually buying commodities. They're all proxies or derivatives. But these other ones, you can get the actual asset. And what's interesting, and we go from 1972 right through to 2016, is the best performing asset was real estate. 15 years out of the 40, real estate outperformed everything. Second was gold at 8 years, and third was silver also at 8 years. Then you have bonds at 6 years outperformed. Stocks outperformed only on 5 years. And cash actually outperformed 2 years. So it's interesting, and it to me blows my mind, because most of the portfolios and all the advisors that we deal with primarily have a 60-40 mix of stocks and bonds. That's it. Like, it's the other assets don't even exist.
Yeah. Well, Wall Street's never been favorable to the precious metals, as we both know. What's interesting, the last market, as you probably remember, Nick, there was actually, I forget who the broker was, but it was a big name. And they put together a portfolio that you could invest in prior to the ETF, but you would get shares in a bunch of numismatic coins that they had put together this portfolio. It's right at the top of the market. It's like, man, you couldn't, you know, it's ringing that bell. It's like, get in, you know, rare coins are the way to go. These rare coins, you know, you get this portfolio, you don't have to own them all. You just have a, you know, percentage of it. And I'm thinking, oh man, that's it. And of course it was. But this time around, you've already got these massive paper paradigms of the GLD, the SLV, several others. You've got the double times fund, the triple times fund. You've got ETFs that are, you know, the nugget. You've got all kinds of stuff out there. And, of course, this is all in what I call the paper paradigm that takes money away from direct investment. And, you know, I'm okay with that, Nick. I mean, you know, I want to be consistent with people who've seen my other interviews that spoke to me. As long as you have that, you know, 10 to 20%, you know, that you touch, you own, and you know where it is. If you want to go venture out into ETFs or, you know, story stocks or, you know, biotech, or be my guest. My point is, if you don't start at the solid base and have really cash as backup to your living expenses and then really gold and silver physical, you are, you know, then I've missed my purpose. I mean, my purpose is to teach people this for free, because it's that important, especially now, as you see, they're all coming together and people think, oh, well, I've heard it before. It can't happen, or it won't happen in America and all this stuff. And, you know, I've taken my fair share of hits and it's fine. I'm, you know, I'm okay with it. From the day I was born, it wasn't that early, but from my early, in my 9, 10, 11 age range, I just felt, one, what my purpose was, and two, it would happen in my lifetime.
Right. Well, the thing is, people have, you know, hard time imagining, because the whole thing is complacency bias, normalcy bias, like it's all ingrained. And that's what was interesting, you know, in Jim Poplava's Perfect Storm. Well, that was the thing. That's never happened before, you know, that particular storm. It was unbelievable, you know. So the thing is, just because it's never happened before doesn't mean it won't. But in the case of monetary system, it has happened before. I got a whole wall full of, you know, defunct currencies with lots of zeros on them, you know. Yeah. So it's happened again and again and again. People don't understand that, and in most cases they haven't stopped to think about what money is, where it comes from, how the whole systems work. Because then I think it was Henry Ford that said, if they figured out how the money system worked, there'd be a revolution by the morning.
Yeah,
so that's right. And it's just a question of ignorance, and people haven't figured it out. So thank you, David. And again, for our readers that see this, David's book, and I'd recommend everybody get a copy. There's a lot of great stats and some trading ideas that will help enhance everybody's portfolios all the more. And as always, it's a pleasure, David.
I always have fun with you, Nick. Thank you so much for inviting me.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.